This is A Sustainable Mind, episode 80. Hey everyone, this is Marjorie Alexander, and today I'm going to be sharing with you a conversation that's a little bit different than our normal interviews. We will be addressing the topic of the Texas power outages that happened less than 2 weeks ago with the huge storms that swept across the U.S. And talk about the impact that that had on the Texas power grid. So this is the very first episode of this kind. It's a stripped down version of the typical interviews. It is addressing something that's current, and it is our very first video interview, which I've posted on some of our social media outlets, so you can go ahead and check that out if you'd like. In the future, I would like to address current climate events that are happening in the news. Always unfortunate when events like this do happen, but I do want to make sure that we are addressing these as much in real time as we possibly can. So that's the reason for the stripped down editing. Also, we have our very first live event going on later this year in April. And if you would like to learn more about that, stick around to the end of the episode. I'll give you the website and all of the details there. Now, let's get into the episode. So Seth Manser is a longtime sustainability advocate. He's a Marine Corps veteran. Thank you for your service, Seth, and has developed a deep understanding of the multitude of energy management solutions with a focus on commercial scale projects. His primary focus is helping organizations take a proactive approach to evaluating and taking action on their energy needs. And today, Seth is going to be chatting with us about the Texas power grid issue, what exactly happened, and what can be done in the future to really prevent something like this. So, Seth, my very first question is deregulation. Deregulated power grid, Texas. Is the entire state of Texas deregulated? Where are kind of the boundaries of that? And what exactly does deregulation mean for the power grid?
Sure, absolutely. And for all your listeners, it's definitely, and it's tough seeing what's going on in Texas right now, because it's 100% human-made problem. Mm-hmm. This is completely preventable. And I hope that as the, we get past the initial finger pointing and we get to final reports of exactly who was accountable, really, really interested to see as the official reporting all comes out. Before I jump into the deregulation question, the interesting thing about Texas is that Texas has its own utility grid. There is Eastern Interconnection Point, Western, and then there is ERCOT, the Electricity Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT as the acronym. And that's where the number one problems all start to come from. Because Texas wanted to be its own electric grid, when FDR was rolling out the rural electric co-op programs across the US, Texas really put their foot down and said, nope, we don't want any federal intervention. It was formalized in the 1970s with ERCOT officially not being under the federal regulatory regime. So that's where the number one problems start. And the ability to buy and sell electricity across state borders, that's where the federal government gets involved. Right. So that's, police-wise, you have local police, state police, but then the FBI does cross-border. In that same analogy, in the energy markets, FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Committee, handles cross-border transactions of energy. Last summer, when California was burning up with heat and wildfire, they were able to borrow electricity and buy it from other markets. Now, the challenge is Nevada and Arizona also had their own heat waves. So it's not a panacea of all problems to fix. But then as you step into the deregulation component. So for any listeners that our last conversation, we got into a little bit of some of the energy policy. So real quick, the way energy works is that you historically have vertically integrated utilities. So they handled the generation of the electricity, as well as the transmission and distribution, getting it from the power plant to your home or business. In the 1990s, there was a movement to start deregulating. And interestingly, Enron, Texas-based Enron, was really leading the way. And because of the deregulation in California, Enron owned the power lines and they owned the grid and they owned the power plants. Now, without the federal oversight and regulatory elements of that of the deregulation, Enron frankly was able to game the system. So for anybody that hasn't seen that movie, it's on Netflix. The movie is called The Smartest Heads in the Room.
Smartest
Guys in the Room, yeah, thank you. And so that just shows just on the one hand, how deregulation can fundamentally break down, and lives were lost when the traffic lights went out in California, and all of a sudden hospitals were scrambling, maybe didn't have the right amount of backup power. And so I bring that up because it's as we come to the kingpin of deregulation, which is the state of Texas. So ERCOT, again, Electricity Reliability Council of Texas, a little bit of an oxymoron at this point because it's not all that reliable, as we've seen over the last week. So in Texas, they control about 90% of the electricity in the state. The other 10% are local co-ops and other, you know, areas that are outside of the ERCOT control. And so if you're in Texas, you got to choose a third party supplier. And so that's the deregulation component of in Texas. And so Marjorie, as you're kind of hearing this, you know, from the ERCOT perspective, and then coming down to the state level deregulation, what are some things that you've heard from your listeners, questions as to just how could this happen?
Well, I mean, one thing that I've heard, I think just because it's kind of top of mind, I suppose, for the ones that were lucky enough to still have their power on, was why were their bills so high? I did get this question from someone last night that I was on the phone with. And I mean, I was like, don't quote me on this, but I'm going to tell you what I think. But then listen to this episode because it's coming out in a couple of days, and I really want to, you know, get the answer from someone who actually knows. How is the pricing structured in Texas, and how does that differ from other states like California or Pennsylvania or whatever? I feel as though, you know, based on how the grids are situated in each state, the calculation would be different. But since Texas has been kind of operating as its own entity, are you basically just paying a share of everyone that's using the power currently? Or how exactly does that work? Because I've seen numbers as high as, I mean, one person that was on the news had a bill of way over $2,000 when they were previously paying about $170, all the way up to someone that was paying in the over $10,000. It was like 100 times their normal bill. So what exactly is happening there?
Absolutely. So real quick, again, for everybody listening, this is a failure of policy and regulation of the utility grid. And as part of the regulation of the electric grid, Texas is very big on market. They are very, they think that, generally speaking, the solution to problems is a market-based approach. And the way that Texas differs from a lot of other energy markets around the country is they have a spot market. So you can buy and sell energy at kind of hyper-specific intervals of time. And so I'm sitting here in Massachusetts, and generally speaking, when I see deregulated third-party supply options, they are a variable rate, but it's set for the month. Now, that rate next month might go up or it might go down, depending on what the overarching energy markets are doing. In Texas, you don't lock in a variable rate over the month. You get literally whatever the energy costs at that moment. And so, again, market-based approach sounds great until you have a situation like this right here, where you have, whether you're, you know, younger, fully employed, or, you know, unfortunately, as you know, there's a lot of folks that are unemployed from the pandemic, and then certainly older folks, or those that are on fixed income. This is significant, and so it's very important. Again, as I've mentioned on prior conversation, really understanding your energy strategy. And when you sign up for energy contracts, it's kind of like a credit card deal, right? Where there's a lot of terms and conditions that the top level number of what you might save, you know, you should be very suspect of that number and make sure that you're very clear on what's going to take for you to get that savings. And so as a significant amount of the energy infrastructure went offline, even though we had a week notice of extreme temperatures going to be hitting Texas, that was not enough time to ramp up production. And there's a few things kind of on the overarching technical side, love to get into, but want to make sure that we really close the loop and fully answer the how the electric bill question could blow up so much for some energy users. And so from as you're hearing that, Marjorie, do you think that gives at least some insight into what people might be facing and then, you know, encouraging them to go out and shop for likely a new supplier that doesn't have them on those spot market rates?
Sure. So I guess, I mean, I do understand that it's a variable amount that, and you are paying for whatever the cost of the power that you're using in the moment, but no one is sitting at their computer or on their device staring at the rates that are coming from the third party supplier that they have chosen to go with. So what determines the price, those prices? And you said something there at the end of your last comment. They didn't have enough notice to ramp up production, but electricity is something that kind of happens. I mean, it's not like you can store it for weeks and weeks and weeks. So when you say ramping up production, what you mean is adding on additional what? What would that look like?
Sure. So there's a few elements to, so the overarching in Texas, generally speaking, the utility grid sees their peak in the summertime because of air conditioning.
Okay.
And in the wintertime, though there is a bit of electric heat, generally speaking, a good portion of the electric grid, the generation, is actually turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And so to throttle up these large scale assets, these coal, nuclear, and natural gas facilities that have been running at a lower volume or just completely shut off for the season, to get them ramped up.
Got it. Okay.
Amidst, and then this is, so that's kind of part A of the problem. And overarching is, again, going back to policy and regulation, is that back in 2011, there was not as bad as this week, but there was a cold snap. And the cold snap stressed out some of the infrastructure. The federal government put together some reporting and it found that there was significant weatherization upgrades that were recommended for the Texas grid. And the weatherization is across the board. It's adding the heater elements to wind turbines. It's adding heater elements to natural gas compressor stations. There were people that literally had space heaters where the natural gas is coming up out of the ground, mm-hmm. space heater to keep it from freezing.
Mm-hmm.
When the grid, and this goes back to the market-based approach. If you're an energy contractor installing a pipeline, if somebody wants to bury it 4 feet versus only 2 feet, the 4 foot deep contractor is going to cost a lot more and it's not going to be price competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of pipelines and there's a lot of infrastructure in Texas that was optimized for price, what it costs to install.
Okay.
And not necessarily the reliability of the grid. It's been some finger pointing at wind turbines. and
I'm sorry, I had to laugh at that because.
Thank you. Yes.
I mean, the percentage of electricity produced by turbines down in that area is like 10 or 12%.
It is. And what's really interesting is even though they weren't retrofitted with the cold weather package,
mm-hmm.
and it gets colder in Iowa, it gets colder in Minnesota. We have wind turbines up in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. And guess what? They're cranking out power because they're properly prepared for it. Interestingly, ERCOT noted that more than 50% of their capacity is from coal and natural gas. That was the predominant reason that, and nuclear had some difficulties producing and delivering.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, wind turbines actually produced more than they were forecasted to. And fun little nerd fact, what air is more dense when it's cold. And so as that block of air is blowing against the wind turbine blade, that wind turbine propeller is able to spin more efficiently.
Interesting. So
it's one of these interesting fun facts where that got kind of missed in the Fox News, that the wind turbines actually
missed, omitted, you know.
omitted, complete fallacy.
Yeah.
The truth hurts sometimes. And so, you know, there's some legislators in Texas that I've heard on NPR recently that they're taking ownership of the situation. They were in the House and the state Senate in 2011 when this report came out, and they did not take action. They did not push ERCOT to enforce those regulations and upgrade their entire system for cold weather readiness. So we can't say that this was unprecedented. We can't say we didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
Literally 10 years ago, 2011, it happened. We have the definitive reporting, and it's a tragic situation. And ultimately my mantra is, you know, everybody can do something, and through knowledge, action, and motivation, people do take action. And unfortunately, this is going to create a lot of action. People buying a bunch of generators, and I can't blame them. And, you know, so some of the longer term fixes for people to really stabilize and create that resilience is getting an energy strategy in place, knowing exactly what your third party energy contracts say, so you don't get in that volatile, amazing, you know, $7,000, $2,000 bill when you're used to a couple hundred dollar bill.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding what energy management you have in your building. And to your question about knowing what's the spot market, if I'm going to be charged on the spot market for energy, how do I know what's using energy in my facility?
Right.
We have energy sensors, we have reporting. All this technology exists. And so really encouraging all the listeners to, you know, really dig in, understand your energy contracts that you're a part of, and then understand what energy opportunities you have at your facility. Do you have a generator? Do you have a battery? Does it make sense to go solar? Does it make sense to go to add a wind turbine? You know, what are things that you can do to increase resilience at your property? Because it's to get ERCOT straightened out and get the infrastructure upgraded, it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
It's going to take, and the pushback from Texas, Rick Perry, even as late as last year, had a conversation with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He was so brazen to say that Texans would rather be in the dark and cold than be under the federal government's thumb of regulation.
I feel like I remember that.
And that's that just has surfaced over the last week. It was kind of a crazy Rick Perry off the cuff comment back in a year ago that I have to say I kind of didn't take him seriously when a lot of things that he said. And unfortunately, he was quite serious. And now the Texans have the opportunity, as well as everybody, to vote in the people that will take responsibility for what's going on in their state, in their market, because energy is very local. And I'll just one other point on the federal regulation side: Florida, North Dakota, you know, Republican red states. You don't hear them squawking about the pressures of the federal government. They can borrow and sell energy across state lines because they're outside of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting talking point. It sounds great to pull yourself by your bootstraps and be independent, but there's a real reason why the grid exists.
Yeah.
And we need to hold our public officials accountable for things that are well above, you know, what's on our property, the lines, the transmission, the generation. We shouldn't have to worry about that before we go to bed. Managing energy in our house, having a little backup, making sure we know what our food storage situation is. That's on us.
Yes.
That's on each and every one of us individuals. But to have power go out and then to have water mains breaking and, amidst a pandemic, amidst people are economically hurt. And so they're not able to just write a check and go over to Home Depot and buy a generator.
Right.
This is just a terrible perfect storm that
yes.
I really hope, you know, people in Texas, you know, I'm here. There's a lot of energy experts that are here to help. And if you're not in Texas and you're open to and looking to, you know, learn more, contact me, contact someone to talk energy strategy. So I really appreciate you having me on the podcast. Sure. Really relevant topic.
Absolutely. And I do want to tell people how to get in touch with you. You can get in touch with Seth and his team at rerenergygroup.com. One more question, Seth. You talked about making sure that you vote in the right people. Who exactly has their hands in something like ERCOT? Who determines that board, or what does that even look like? I mean, you know, when you're talking about your municipality versus state officials, and then which state officials are impacting things like the power grid, where our power comes from, how, you know, infrastructure is developed and where the money goes. What position specifically are we talking about voting in to make sure that in, say, 10 years, once all of this stuff, you know, gets addressed, hopefully doesn't happen again?
Great question. So there's three general categories. There's the State Department of Public Utilities. So they go by different names, different states, but you have the Department of Public Utilities, Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources, DOER. And so first, that's under the executive branch. So who you vote for your governor has significant impact. So there's step one. Step two are the grid operators. So each of the grids, you have California Independent Service Operator, New York, New England. You have a bunch of these different market regulators around the country. And I couldn't tell you exactly how each of those are voted in. That's a great thing for me to read into. And then on a number of the councils, they are appointed, and in some states they are voted in. And understanding exactly how your state, how your energy market operates, you know, there's significant variation between states, between the different energy markets. Ultimately, you know, there are a number of elected officials, and then there's a number of appointed officials. So then at the FERC level, the FERC commissioner is appointed by the president, but then each member of the FERC committee has the length of term that they have, and then whoever is president at that time gets to install the next commissioners.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for this fantastic information. And again, check out Seth's website, rerenergygroup.com. You can get in touch with him via email. This will be linked in the description below, but the email is smansur, spelled S-M-A-N-S-U-R, at rerenergygroup.com. Thanks again so much, Seth, for joining us and for shedding a little bit of light on this whole situation. For those of you that are interested in this conversation on a larger level in terms of being a resident anywhere, Seth will actually be on our show again for an episode that we produced a couple weeks back. That'll be coming out in April. So we'll be talking about your energy bill and managing your energy both on a household level, as well as those of you that might have larger brick and mortar locations for your business. I'm really looking forward to that episode, but I wanted to make sure that we got this issue addressed now. So I hope that you all have learned a lot. Thanks again, Seth.
Absolutely. Thank you, Marjorie.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to this week's bonus episode on the Texas power grid outages. As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, later this year, we are hosting our very first live event. That live event will be called Mass Eco Live, or Mitigation, Adaptation, and Sustainable Systems in Ecology Live. So that means that you, the listener, will have an opportunity to interact with me, the panelists that are going to be on our panel discussions, as well as some of our keynote speakers, and learn some hands-on things in our workshops. If you would like to attend this year's event, or if you would like to participate in some way, either as a panelist, a workshop leader, or even help me out with organizing the event, because I am at this point doing it pretty much all alone, please head on over to masseco.com. Again, that's masseco.com. www.asustainablemind.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on A Sustainable Mind.